Mini-episode 1916 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1916. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with my fellow FDH Lounge dignitary, Ben Chu, who is on when we're talking sports. Most of the time, it is for NBA purposes. He is our chief NBA hoops analyst. But I truly appreciate him filling in here. Some of our football guys are off on R&R this time of year, or are, on the other hand, sometimes some of them super busy at work. There's no in between. It all adds up to unavoidable.
You guys have some like a rest and relaxation plan all of a sudden?
Yeah. It's like,
what was the FDH Lounge benefits package that I make?
Yeah, it would benefit you to find out, wouldn't it? But I think, again, there's no in between. Guys are either off on vacation right now or they're bogged down at work. It all adds up to unavailability. Thank you so much for being here for this one, buddy. And this is one where, and again, the conscientiousness on your part of you, you know, really very much kind of detailing with me, like, what do you want to talk about? What should I be ready to? Whatever. I come into this with a great deal of confidence on my ability to lead this thing. And I promise you there will not be one moment you will have the deer in the headlights look. That is my money back guarantee, Venture.
I mean, that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. You're in good hands, brother. We're going to have a good time with this one. And there have been, again, some, we talked about this briefly off air. So some of the bigger, flashier things that happened in the free agency / trading period ever since the NFL had its new year, as it sometimes usually does, early to mid-March. We are now in the 2026 NFL season / off season / whatever. And the number one free agent on the tracker, according to CBS Sports, Tyler Linderbaum, going from Baltimore to Las Vegas. This is my conspiracy theory, is that this is what ties into the whole Max Crosby thing, because I think it was twofold. I think Baltimore was looking at this in the fact that Trey Hendrickson was still out there on the market, and they were going, okay, maybe we can get Max Crosby times 0.85 or times 0.9, but we won't have to give up two first round picks for him. But then also, I think it was a little bit of like F the Raiders after they signed away their franchise player center. So I think there was a little bit of both there. But like Sashi Brown, what an embarrassment to the league, him going out there like, oh, it must be a slow news cycle if you were talking about what we did with Max Crosby. Like, you got to be kidding me here that they're going to try and play it off like that wasn't highly unusual that ended up happening there. I can't think of the last time that a huge NFL trade was voided by some type of injury concerns, and especially injury concerns along the lines of, hello, Max Crosby didn't finish out the season. Like, we know he's not 100% right now. The question is whether he'll be 100% on opening day. So just the fact that there were things about him physically that were documented and were on the record, and the Ravens pulled this anyway, they deserve every bit of opprobrium that has been coming their way, in my estimation.
I know also, too, Rick, it was a very surprising move, too. Not necessarily to go from Crosby to Hendrickson. It was just more that I think when all of us saw that Max Crosby was going to get signed by Baltimore or get traded to Baltimore, essentially, we all just assumed it was a done deal. And then that pivot occurred. And it was, again, we all saw how the Ravens performed last season. They did really well. But again, one of their major issues was pass rush. And, you know, when you have a defense that I would kind of say regressed a little bit, it wasn't like as lights out as it had been in the past. But having a guy like Hendrickson and improving some of that interior on the defensive line just to get more pressure on the quarterback is something that, especially, again, we're in the AFC North timeline. If you remove Joe Burrow, like, I don't think anyone's truly worried about the Browns quarterback crew at this point, and no one's really, depending on whatever Pittsburgh decides to do with Aaron Rodgers, I don't really think it was a major need, but it's more just, I would say, just trying to get back to sort of the old Ravens at this period of time, because last year was very atypical of them in terms of they were a much better offensive team than they were a defensive team.
Well, they've had a real fall off. And one of the things that's been hilarious to me as somebody who grew up a Browns fan is seeing 2 years ago when Mike McDonald got hired away, there were a lot of Ratbird fans out there that were like, they should have promoted him. Harbaugh should be gone. Well, 2 years later, I'd say they were right. And Mike McDonald not being there, I think, is part of the reason that they fell off, as well as who's the gentleman who worked with him there very, very strongly. It was the two of them leading that Baltimore defense. That would be Jesse Minter, who is returning to Baltimore as their head coach. And as much as it pains me to say on a personal level, I think one heck of a hiring there. I think that's going to be a very, very successful hire for them. And as you say, helping them to get back to where they have been, at least reputationally, defensively.
And I mean, statistically, I also say too, Rick, their numbers were still very good. Mm-hmm. It's just it was a weird year where it felt to me that the offense was much better than the defense.
Yes. And again, looking at it, I mean, they could still use some help on the trenches on both sides of the ball. One of the things here is, again, with the free agency period, looking at this to see, you would think that for most teams, it's basically sort of a warm-up of, you know, you knock off a couple of needs before you get into the draft. And then if you're doing it right, if you're having the kind of offseason that you want to have, you fill a bunch more needs in the top couple of rounds of the draft. And for Baltimore, again, they're sort of holding steady here as far as the needs that came open and the needs that got filled thus far. But the moves they've made have been a high profile, like bringing in Hendrickson, although the loss of Linderbaum was a high profile loss as well. There was a team that I said this to you off air that you would not believe this in terms of the way that the coverage has been this offseason. This has been very, very, very subtle that they've done this, but a team that on our FDH index here of needs went from 7 down to 3 needs, and very quietly filling these holes. They're a team that filled a lot of holes 2 years ago when they were very, very, very successful. Hint, they are geographically not far from the Ravens. Who's the team, Ben Chu? Who do you think that filled that?
They're not far from the Ravens.
Very close. Very close. Let me spoon feed you. They're very close geographically to where the Ravens are. Couldn't be close.
I don't want to say it, Rick. I don't want to break it down. I have to guess.
Yeah.
Is it Cincinnati?
No, it's Washington.
It's Washington. Okay.
It's Washington. Yeah. It seems very hard to believe it's Washington, isn't it?
Yeah, it all seems, yeah.
Nobody's talking about this. But here's the thing, though. Nobody was talking about what they did two off seasons ago. I mean, that's obviously the upgraded quarterback. You bring in Daniels, and people are looking at that. But this has been, from the way that we've been tracing it, the last couple of off seasons, bringing in Daniels coincided with an off season where they filled a bunch of needs. Houston, the year they made the jump up, having C.J. Stroud in there coincided with when they filled a bunch of needs. And yes, and again, we cannot leave out the schedule part of New England's success from last year, but New England also had a really good offseason, and a really good offseason the year before. Two consecutive off seasons of filling a bunch of needs as they bring in Drake May. So a lot of times, Ben, it's easy to focus on the flashy moves that's being done, but many times we've been tracing this the last couple of off seasons. General managers are also quietly doing the unsensational work of plugging other holes while they're getting their quarterback in there. For Washington this year, theoretically, it's just a matter of getting Daniels healthy, getting him back under center, and they're hoping, picking up where they left off 2 years ago, the moves that they've made this offseason have helped set them up to do so.
Right, and I think one of the things, too, that we always talk about in terms of filling out your roster in the free agency and the draft, especially for the NFL, is depth is as needed as ever in that league, because we saw essentially in the playoffs, especially I think the chief narrative of this would be the LA Chargers, is when their offensive line essentially went down, Rick, they were done for in the playoffs. It really yep. was as very quickly. And again, the one thing I would say is we've seen over the last 5 years is the amount of tremendous offensive depth just overall in terms of seeing guys who were, you know, starters on teams 2 or 3 years ago now owning a more of a backup role, but still being a, how would I put this probably, being an impact player. And I think what we talked about this too mainly in the NBA is that when depth increases in the league, there's always means that's good for players, because for free agency, there's a higher percentage chance, especially on the offensive end, that you will be able to get a contract with somewhere else because of that experience and that ability to help a team. And especially with Washington, which we saw last year, despite Daniels' injury, they regressed a little bit, but they still at times looked like the team that made the playoffs the prior year.
Yeah, there were definite flashes. And the last couple of years, we've been tracing this, that in terms of depth, that is a very good point of comparison between what we've been saying about the NBA. You're right about that, because the NFL, it had gotten down to a low in recent years of 6.19 needs per team going into the draft. We've got it right now at 7, and even 7 needs per team. So it's up a little bit from what it was last year, but the arrow had been going down. So teams have been doing a better job going into the draft of filling needs, and teams have been coming out of the draft with a better job of filling needs. I said to you off air, this is another interesting one too. There's a team, again, nobody's talking about this pretty much for the most part, a team that is getting picked over. Now, they had one relatively high-profile loss of a player, and I say relatively so. A team that made the playoffs last year, they had 9 holes, according to us, coming into the offseason, and they're up to 11 holes. So this is kind of a dramatic thing for a team that was a playoff team a year ago. And given the absolute dearth of coverage out there, you probably don't know who this is.
Wait, did you say do not know who this is?
Probably not. I mean, no, that's... Okay.
So who is the team, Rick?
The team... And the player that I mentioned a second ago, relatively high-profile player, Travis Etienne, going from Jacksonville to New Orleans. The Jacksonville Jaguars apparently have been in a soma coma since free agency started, because right. there's just not a whole lot going on there. And, again, Liam Cohen, an excellent – I mean, he established himself, I think, as a top-tier coach in the first year. But again, you know, they better be doing some stuff on draft – days 1 and 2, especially maybe day 3 as well, the way that they're going here, because again, the way that the league is, we've been saying this the last couple of years that, I mean, if you're even making lateral moves, you're actually going backwards mm-hmm. because other teams are out there filling holes. And this is one of the things where, again, as I'm going through, as I was updating, and you can find our pre-free agency needs assessment up on the main page of fantasydrafthelp.com. It's still there. As I was going through and updating it here, after the trades and free agency had gotten going, that was one of the things that was shocking to me. I'm like, but then it was like, yeah, I guess the only real thing that anybody talks about with Jacksonville is ATM leaving. So I guess yeah. it does kind of make sense.
And so, also too, we just discussed, like, the AFC South last year was pretty down perceptionally from a lot of people's minds.
Yeah.
And now you kind of have a solid looking core now of Houston, the Jaguars, and the Colts. If, again, last year was a mirage for the Colts. But,
right.
again, we also are going to see, especially with the draft, I know there's going to be a ton of compensatory picks. And I think we saw this a little bit in the NBA where teams are going to trade back and just acquire more usable players, even if they're mm-hmm. not of the highest caliber, to just go out there. And, again, the Jaguars – were very surprising. Again, obviously the Colts sort of collapse there at the end was really the reason why they got into the playoffs to begin with. Yep. But they played a very close game with Buffalo. So it kind of feels like they're, I don't want to say turning the corner, but it almost feels like there's a reshaping of the roster that will either put them in prime position in the AFC South, or they're just kind of going to go back to what we thought they were over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, and again, it's a bad time for them to be standing still. Although, like I said, the last couple of years, I mean, it's a bad time for anybody to be standing still because it almost certainly means you're going to be sliding backwards next year. Houston has been one of the better teams at filling holes thus far in the offseason, from 9 holes to 5. Other teams that have done very well thus far, I can't even believe I'm saying this, like Dallas from 6-3, a team that's been the poster child franchise for Stars and Scrubs for a long time, has quietly been doing a very competent job the last offseason or two in minimizing the holes on that roster. You've got other teams that have done decently well in this regard here. You've got San Francisco, which has gone from 10 holes down to 7, plus they're getting some guys that are healthy. That's definitely helping. The Jets going from 10 to 5 is relatively dramatic in that sense. But there is another thing, and this is where we sort of get in the weeds a little bit here, is that, like, talking about this, that, like, New England 2 years ago, it was a thing where they filled a bunch of holes, but I think it took them another offseason. And Chris Galloway and I, when we were doing the divisional previews last year, talked about this. And that was a thing where sometimes you fill holes, but you're doing so just with, like, competent players. You're not necessarily getting anybody that's a standout. And it seems to me that's what's happening with the Jets here. Now, a team that I said this about a year ago was New Orleans, where I was like, you know, they on paper, they filled a bunch of holes. And once again, it's surprising because nobody's really talking much about this. And I was like, but who did they really fill the holes with? Well, they surprised me by winning 6 games because I didn't think that roster had 6 wins.
And I mean, when you're having a combined quarterback duo of Spencer Rattler and Tyler Shough, it's not really.
Yeah. Yeah. Although the latter gentleman really kind of stepped up and grabbed a hold here. And again, he's got a lot to prove this year, but was doing better. That was a big part of the reason they managed to win 6 games, was that he was able to play better than people thought. So we could be looking at another similar situation with the Jets, where this is a roster that on paper is better than it was a year ago. I mean, then again, a quarterback, Fields to Smith, is a lateral move at best, I think most would say, and that is the most important position on the field. So right. I would not
and
look
least,
for that.
But I will say they were at least able to keep Breece Hall in the short timeline too. So
that they were able to do that. Yeah, absolutely. On a timeline when Dallas has been defying expectations in this regard, Pittsburgh, under the surface the last couple of years, that's been one of the things. And again, for all of the, I think, justified criticism that Mike Tomlin was taking as a playoff coach and, you know, Mr. 9-8, sort of the new era Jeff Fisher, it's been the deterioration of this roster in recent years that's really been the kind of thing here. They've been a little bit more Stars and Scrubs. Pittsburgh going from 8 holes down to just 4. Now, again, the Browns, looking at it, going from 7-6, but addressing that offensive line. That's sort of the classic example of what I'm talking about here, of like that offensive line. Okay, it's going to be better than it was a year ago, but that was like a historically putrid offensive line they had a year ago. I mean, a shower curtain would have provided more protection. So sometimes you can upgrade in an area, but it's easy to exaggerate how much impact that's going to have. And I think that's where the Browns are, is that, like, they're crossing their fingers and hoping and praying that they are at least, you know, within shouting distance, basically, of league average offensive line this year. And, you know, as opposed to being where they were a couple of years ago when they had Bill Callahan, the best offensive line coach in the game there, and you had Bitonio in his prime and Wyatt Teller in his prime, and you had a line that was really, you know, something special to the degree to which they really backslid last year. So they're hoping just to get back to league average, I think, you know, in that regard. But when it comes to some of the other more urgent holes that were out there, Buffalo, they really need another wide receiver. They go get DJ Moore. But the thing is now, between him and Keon Coleman, who their idiot general manager dumped on in a press conference here. It was the owner. It was the idiot owner who absolved the general manager from making the pick on this. You're paying Coleman and Moore, I was looking at this, somewhere in the ballpark of what the top two wide receivers in Cincinnati are making. That is not good financial management, Ben Chu.
Right, and I think one of the things, too, is that the Bills were, as we know, Rick, were incredibly close last season to making a big run
Yeah.
To the Super Bowl. And it felt like that this offseason going and focusing on the offense, because again, we talked about stars and scrubs with the Cowboys, and we saw, even though, like, I'm not going to disrespect guys like James Cook and that and their wide receiving core at this time, it's just, you would think when they're trying to maximize Josh Allen's prime at this period of time that you'd be doing everything humanly possible to get him more weapons. It's something very similar we saw with Lamar Jackson in Baltimore too. Like, you really need to kind of get guys. And again, they, in a way, kind of bought high right now on DJ Moore because he had an exceptional season last year in Chicago.
Yeah.
But they also gave away a draft pick that Chicago could definitely use to improve their defense and work on the line and still be able to have guys like Luther Burden and still have guys like Roma Dunze. So it feels like the Bills are just trying to maximize at this point, but I also do kind of wonder, is this a little bit too late? And are you paying too much of a price at this period of time?
I certainly think that they are. Now, teams that are going very, very, very heavy at a moment in time when they are seeing a real window, the LA Rams, I think, had a very, very, very strong claim to being the second best team in the NFL last year. And going out and getting not just Trent McDuffie, but Jalen Watson for the secondary there. They needed to upgrade their cornerbacks. And you talk about doing so in a big, big, big way. Classic LA Rams, of where they're not really worried about the first round picks here. It's just a matter of let's go get first round value in the form of star players who, again, we're going to have to pay, not like guys on their rookie contract. We're going to have to pay legitimately. So that's where the Rams are. And that's where, even when they won the Super Bowl, I said it at the time that they were like the platonic ideal of stars and scrubs. Like, whatever you think the best version is, that's what the Rams were, because they didn't have the draft capital to have the depth that a lot of other teams did. But they had just enough from the transcendent players that were on that roster. They're looking to do that again. You mentioned the Chargers, by the way, of like getting back their bookend offensive tackles here. And this is a thing where, in looking at it, the City of Angels hosting the Super Bowl on Valentine's Day next year, and like, the Rams and the Chargers both looking pretty good right now. Like, you think ESPN would love that one for their Super Bowl, Benchu?
I mean, I guess heaven can wait, right?
That's right. That's right, yeah.
But no, I mean, it's going to, especially with what the Rams did last year, I think most of us outside of maybe, you could make an argument for like Buffalo and maybe the Ravens up here, they were there clearly the second or best team in the league at that period. I mean, getting a guy like McDuffie to help shore up their cornerbacks, which again was the main reason why they lost to Seattle in the playoffs. They just couldn't stop anyone late in that game.
Right.
So it just really, I would arguably say at this point, based off what Seattle losing guys like Kenneth Walker and Woolen and Kobe Bryant, I would be behooved to say that the Rams have to be the favorite in the NFC right now, just from what they were able to accomplish and getting a guy like McDuffie to help shore up that defense.
I think so. And this is where, again, and I count myself as somebody who really didn't see it coming last year with Seattle. I really, really, really underestimated that offseason.
I don't think anyone did, Rick, that Mike McDonald was 7-10 the prior year.
And I thought it was going to be another 7-10 season. And in my divisional preview, I said, I'm only saying 7-10 because of the level of respect I have for Mike McDonald. I think he's going to lift them to 7-10. He lifted them a lot further than that. And that was where, again, they didn't have a whole lot of picks in the draft. They didn't have as much in the way of draft capital as they're going to have this year. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, did they make it work. And I've talked about this before on the show, that one of the terms that I use a lot of times on the show, and a lot of times I will use it for a certain kind of safety, is that military term of force multiplier, of somebody who makes that impact, not only himself, but the players around himself are elevated by him. Nick Amonwari in year one was one of the most important players in their starting 22, bar none. So that's going to be one of the things where, again, they have lost some pieces here in free agency. They've taken some lumps. They've retained some guys as well. They locked down JSN for what as close to the long term as anything we would say in the league this year, a 4-year deal. So it's a thing where, and I expect them to be impactful in the draft as they were, you know, more under the surface last year, but maybe more obviously impactful in the draft this year. And perhaps that will put them back where the Rams are presently. But yeah, it's one of those things where they are going to have some work to do in that regard. And this is, you know, kind of typical. Super Bowl champs get picked over, you know, when the players become available, it ends up being the case. It is sort of like the curse of the Super Bowl MVP. Like nobody's ever, you know, really gone elsewhere and done a whole heck of a lot. I do think that Walker in that Kansas City offense is going to be, you know, pretty
impactful. I make the argument he's probably the most dynamic running back they had. I think, I mean, you would say Clyde Edwards-Helaire is up there too, but he was also kind of up and down during that period of time as well. And then you can also, you know, talk about some of, you know, the stuff with Pacheco as well, but
you probably got to go back to prime Kareem Hunt for that. And that's where, so that, I mean, that helps.
You have to even go further back for any real consistency, and that would be Priest Holmes. So
yeah, that is true. That is true. And Christian Okoye before that. So this is a franchise that has had some you know, dry periods here, but a little more under the radar dry period in recent years because it sort of didn't matter with the strength of the offense with the passing game, but it is starting to matter a bit more now. They're probably not going to have Mahomes at the beginning of the season, so it ends up being a situation where, again, they're going to need a little bit more from him. They're going to need more from the wide receivers. They're going to need them to be healthy and productive and above all consistent. They're going to need, if at all possible, for Kelce to have a little bit more of a vintage Kelce year. Although after the last 2 years, I don't know if that version of him still exists anywhere. But when you're talking about, by the way, wide receivers, there is something to be said for right place, right time. And there's two guys where that really kind of comes to mind. Dallas locking down George Pickens for what's going to be a lot of money here, albeit, again, franchise tag 1 year. But they're paying out to a lot to a guy when they've already got CeeDee Lamb there. But they had to, because those two guys together getting unlocked last year was just phenomenal. So, I mean, the best version of George Pickens, when you're seeing the physical skill of the man and the other things he brings to the table are at the very least minimized. That's kind of the best you're ever going to get with him with some of the other issues. You know, George Pickens in a position at least for 1 year to clean up. As far as cleaning up full spectrum, you've got Alec Pierce with Indianapolis, who didn't even hit the market. There was some thought that maybe Philly might want to be a buyer there and some other teams. And a guy who, in terms of like the casual fan, doesn't necessarily jump off the page name recognition wise, but a guy who, again, you know, yards per catch, his ability to separate, his ability to be explosive. He was a big part of the reason that Danny Dimes transcended being, well, Danny Dimes for the first half of the season when he was healthy. So sometimes it's just a matter of like right place, right time. I know, like going back, you know, years ago, you know, being the North Coast native that I am, back in 2016, all the people were bemoaning, like, Tristan Thompson, he's not worth it. I'm like, but he became a free agent at the right time. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes it's just a matter of time and place, and you're going to end up waving bye-bye to somebody if you don't arguably overpay them. And every year there's a number of free agents that are in that spot, and I think a couple of the wide receivers probably fit the bill for that this year.
Right, and I think probably another one, the high wide receiver profile signings, was Romeo Doubs with the Patriots.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like to New England was kind of, I don't want to say lucky, because lucky, especially in the playoffs, is such a weird term to say, but their pathway, it was pretty simple this year.
We're scheduling like, years. Yeah.
I mean, a guy like him, and then getting a guy like Alvera Tucker to help shore up that offensive line. It's definitely going to be really interesting to see how New England kind of bounces back here, because it's unusual for a team that we knew, like, prior to the year that this was definitely a leader in the clubhouse to win the AFC East. And then they make it all the way to the Super Bowl. And Rick, we know there's only two directions you can go with that.
Right.
It's either your team is going to be a consistent, you know, division winner, or you're going to implode at some point. So it's going to be very interesting to see with those acquisitions kind of how the Patriots offense will start to look.
Well, and the Dobbs thing that you bring up is so interesting in light of what I just said about the Patriots a few minutes ago, that especially two off seasons ago, they filled holes, but it seemed kind of underwhelming. It was going to matter, but it was only going to matter so much. And then another off season of filling more holes last year helped get them to where they were, along with, again, the softest schedule in a decade. But like, Romeo Doubs comes in and arguably becomes their number one wide receiver right off the bat. But given what we've seen of him in Green Bay the last couple of years, that seems more like damning with faint praise. Like, this is a team where if you've got Drake May as your quarterback, like, you should be looking at, like, unless you trade way up, which they're not going to do, they're not going to get Carnell Tate. But I'm seeing some mock drafts where maybe Jordan Tyson's kind of, you know, slips to where they're at. Maybe, you know what I mean? Like, you could still get somebody like that. If you're the Patriots, you should want to have a legit number one wide receiver for Drake May. And Romeo Doubs, to me, like, doesn't fit the bill. It's underwhelming to me in that regard. Like, and it's becoming sort of a classic Patriots thing of like, okay, you upgraded, but let's not exaggerate what that means exactly. And that's a thing where, again, they're going to have to play a real schedule this year. They're still in a division that is going to be really pathetic because I think my Dolphins are in full-on tank mode. Although, by the way, I will say very happy with the Malik Willis move there. He was the belle of the ball, I think, out of all the quarterbacks this offseason. Very happy the fish locked them down.
I would say too, Rick, literally outside of Kyler Murray going to Minnesota, that was probably the second best QB free agency signing of the
year. Yeah, I mean, and you know, Murray going to Minnesota really is interesting as well. And yeah, what that's going to mean.
I think we already know too, Rick. It's going to put a lot of heat on JJ McCarthy to perform this year, because I kind of weirdly believe that Kevin O'Connell would rather have a guy mobile like Kyler Murray be his quarterback than JJ McCarthy.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, in thinking back there, thinking back to Vikings teams of the past, and you being Mr. 90s guy here, I think I am accurate in remembering, it was Randall Cunningham that ended up in Minnesota at some point. Did he not?
Yeah, he was the part of the 15-1 team with
that's right. That's right. So it's a thing where, so this is a franchise that is known for trying to recycle quarterbacks and has done so to great degree. Hello, Sam Darnold the year before. So to do it again, and it's been a sort of a real sort of stream of negativity the last couple of years out of the Phoenix area. It was not a good fit anymore, and maybe hadn't been for a while between Murray and the Cardinals. So what is the coaching staff going to be able to do as far as getting him turned around? Because, yeah, don't believe anything they're saying about open competition and J.J. McCarthy's going to have just as good of a chance. That is not the case. They know internally what I frankly said on draft day, which is that it's ludicrous to put that amount of draft capital in J.J. McCarthy, a game manager at the college level, and you think he's going to step up and there. That's probably the reason the general manager doesn't have his job anymore, is a pick that bad. So Minnesota, again, they were more than a quarterback away this past year. This is a roster that was kind of somewhat in transition. You see this sometimes in the league with salary cap issues. Sometimes teams kind of have to take a knee for a year or so while they get things straightened out. Not always as dramatically as what we're seeing with Miami, where it was essentially the neutron bomb going off but they had to part from Tua and they knew it.
Right.
And it's like, there's going to be wreckage this year, but they get that. And I do think with Jeff Hadley, I do think they're going to play very tough. I think that it's going to be the kind of, you know, new kind of, you know, more brutal image that they're looking for here. I still didn't agree with parting with Mike McDaniel, but I think the notion that the franchise, that the team was kind of soft as far as the makeup of the players, I think that's hard to dispute. I don't think McDaniel was soft, but I think a lot of the players were, and there was a lot of holes on that roster. That was a very poorly constructed roster. So again, I was a guy where, you know, in my heart of hearts, would I have really smiled a big smile if they'd ended up hiring Chris Shula? Absolutely. But I think Jeff Hadley is the kind of guy who can come in there and, you know, get them through it and make them, Ben Shue, the most respectable 3-14 team this league has ever seen. I think that's what we're going to see this year from the Dolphins. You heard it here first.
And I think we also saw, too, Rick, their main game in this offseason was to clear as much cap as possible.
Yeah.
And, you know, just try and build for the future. And it's going to be also interesting to flip the coin there with Tua going to the Falcons, how that quarterback carousel continues to spin in terms of what they're going to look like. Because at times, remember last season, the Falcons were literally a game away from winning that division.
Yeah.
And it gets to the point where you also kind of wonder with the NFC South. Yeah, Tampa Bay has the best team, but it's still, we don't know. They lost Mike Evans to San Francisco. So it's just, there's a whole, that entire division, I'm going to be honest, I think you could flip a coin and no one, it could be any of those teams winning the division in this upcoming season.
Wouldn't surprise me at all. And with Penix already being there and they bring in Tua, what's the last time we saw lefty on lefty action like that with a team here? That's kind of a, although again, as far as roster construction goes, you know, having, you know, that means you're going to be putting a lot of emphasis on the right tackle. Those are a little bit easier to get than left tackles. So, you know, that's.
And I think also too, what shocked me, Rick, if their plan here is to just maybe use Tua as a backup option in case Penix doesn't work, or just be a mentor, because it is unusual to have a left-handed quarterback in the NFL. And it gets to the point where you do have to ask the question, is mentoring a guy like that, bringing in a veteran like Tua, is that going to help him potentially? Or is this more, or there's two ways this can go. Either Tua is going to come in and be accepting of his role and work with Penix to get better, or he's going to try to take the starting job from Penix. So
yeah,
it can go either way. You just never know how it's going to play out in quarterback carousels with these teams.
Yeah, shades of Doug Flutie circa 98, the bitter midget mullet going in there and backstabbing Rob Johnson in Buffalo that year. So yeah, that's always the situation that could be looming, is when you get the backup who is delusional enough to think that he should be starting for any of the 32 teams in the league. I think Tua is a little more grounded than that at this moment in time, but I guess we're going to find out one way or another. But, yeah, it has been pretty wild and pretty interesting with the player movement and the things that have happened thus far in the offseason. And just a number of really interesting moves that have been made by teams and, you know, high-profile moves, that many of which we have alluded to thus far during the course of the show. But some of the biggest ones yet to be addressed in the draft, because on our aforementioned 2026 FDH NFL free agency needs assessment available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. This year, we added a feature on their most urgent needs among all franchises. And you've got to go back, you've got to go down to number three on their offensive tackle for the Browns, which again, upgrade, but how much of an upgrade? But you look at a lot of the other top needs here, and unsurprisingly, teams are waiting to fill those. Number one, I would say Jets at quarterback. Now, they're not going to be able to do it in the draft unless you're believing this stuff about maybe they use their second-round pick on Ty Simpson. I don't think he's going to be there at that point, because we are in silly season, which means that, like, look at where J.J. McCarthy went. He went 12th. Penix went like 8th when nobody had him going in the top 10. So Ty Simpson won't last. He probably should last to 33, but he won't. The Jets, I have that as the number one remaining need. Number two remaining need is the Las Vegas Raiders needing a quarterback. Fortunately for them, Fernando Mendoza, who I think is going to be the next big thing, is sitting right there. So you got a number of other needs. Also in the top 10 here, number six, Arizona. Teams that need quarterbacks, a lot of them, you know, we hear about tanking all the time in the NBA, where you and I are used to having our sports conversations and the whole thing of like, oh, just wait till whatever, wait till, you know, this next draft class comes in. We've seen teams jockeying here in the 2026 NBA draft for any one of the three guys, or possibly four. We've been talking about Acuff recently here. Four guys that might be worth tanking for, at least three guys. But we're looking at a quarterback class in the NFL in 2027 and an absolute dearth in 2026, to where a lot of these teams are just going to be taking a knee. And you got teams like the Browns that are like, well, what the hell? We got Shedeur Sanders on the roster. Let's just see. And if he doesn't get it done, then, hey, we're going to suck enough to have a high pick for the next year. So you've got teams like the Jets. You've got teams like Arizona in the mix here. Once Dante Moore went back at Oregon, and I thought that was a really smart move on his part, by the way, because quarterbacks do not have a good track record when they've only had 1 year worth of playing at the college level. I go back to Haskins in 2018. Part of it was he ended up with the Dan Snyder era Redskins, but like that guy, I thought he was can't miss. I really thought that. That cannon for an arm and everything. But in the end, just the 1 year at Ohio State, he did kind of get a little bit exposed in the league as being inexperienced. In addition to, like I said, playing for an absolute suck franchise. So Dante Moore, I think, did the right thing, but he'll be in a very competitive draft class next year. Arch Manning, I know that my dad would want to shoot me if I didn't mention Julian Sand in the mix right there as well. And any number of these other guys next year that are going to make 2027 a loaded draft class. So what you and I see routinely in the NBA of teams being like, yeah, this is the year we're really going to suck. Like, what a coincidence that San Antonio sucked the way they did the year that Wemby was coming out, right?
Yeah,
who could have seen that coming? You're going to see that this year in the NFL because free agency wasn't enough to fill these needs for these teams here. Because, again, you look at, again, Tua going to Atlanta. Question marks out the yin-yang on that one. Kyler Murray to Minnesota, question marks. Malik Willis to Miami. As much as I love the move for Miami, some question marks because of the number of games that he really played in Green Bay. Although the games that he played in Green Bay, he was just absolutely lights out. So it's one of those things where, again, the NFL is going to be a little bit more NBA-like this fall in terms of teams being like, oh, we're only 2-9 right now. That's a shame.
And I think and it's very funny you mentioned this too, Rick. I know Roger Goodell was recently during the owners' meeting asked about tanking. He said that it would not happen in the NFL. And I do have a feeling we're right into the timeline where next season is going to be the tank fest for the NFL just based on that quarterback class and some of the offensive skill players coming. So I wouldn't say this is a bad draft class. There's a lot of interesting players just on it itself. But I also feel like a lot of, like you said, a lot of these teams are setting their sights for next year.
Well, exactly. And the question is just how ugly it's going to be with some of these teams like it is sometimes in the NBA. Now, I do think in Miami, and I was joking before about the most respectable 3-14 team ever, but like if you were to tell me at the end of the year, 3-14, but with a point differential of like minus 26, I'd be like, I could see that, you know, because I mean, I think that he's going to have them in a lot of games. He's really going to have them, you know, again, they're going to be outmanned at most positions on the field. And again, it'll be a matter of like, what can Willis do in conditions that are completely different than he was dealing with in Green Bay. Although again, even in Green Bay, he was not dealing with, you know, like, you know, Sterling Sharp doesn't work here anymore. You know, you go on and on and on, like though the Green Bay wide receiver core is not what it used to be. So he was not doing it with stiffs like he might be having to do in Miami for a year, but, you know, we'll have to see how that ends up playing out for him. But we are now inside of a month to the draft, and we are planning another draft night extravaganza live coast to coast here for the second year in a row on the lounge. So it was a pleasure to have you in for that one last year, Ben. And once we reach the old witching hour here on draft night, I understand that you might be reaching out to make the tag yet again. So I'll be looking forward to that.
I will hopefully be on board again, Rick, during the witching hour picks, as we like to say.
Absolutely. As Gene Okerlund used to say on Monday Nitro back in the day, the shank of the night. Once we get to that point here, it'll be the time for the Ben Chu appearance and some of the other ones here. We had 9 dignitaries all in all last year. I'm hoping to match or perhaps even better that total this year. But it will be tremendous to do. And again, I appreciate greatly you coming on for this breakdown here of the NFL offseason transactions, Ben Chu. It was an amazing segment, as I knew it would be, and thank you so much for being here, my friend.
I appreciate it, Rick. I'll be back for draft day, hopefully.
Excellent. I look forward to that, as do all of our listeners. I know that. And thank you to all of our listeners for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1916.